This interview is with Margaret Tabbett, a resident of Clay County since 1918. This interview was held at Morehead State University Recording Studio on January 22, 1985. The interviewer is Gladys Westrom, representing the Heritage Commission. Margaret, as a child, where did you live?
I lived on a farm 3 miles west of Cragness, Minnesota, right on the Red River.
And what was your mother like?
Oh, my mother was a hardworking, loving, sweet.
Good.
And she and her husband moved onto the farm that her mother and stepfather had owned. She was a very nervous individual. I can remember her concern many times when my father didn't come home just exactly when she thought she would. He would. And she would pace the yard and pace the floor until she could hear the truck coming down the road. She had been a school teacher prior to her marriage, and I think a very community-minded, community-interested person.
What do you think would surprise her if she should come back and visit you today?
Oh, I think all the modern appliances that we have, the things that make homemaking and housekeeping so much easier. And I think probably another thing would be I often think of the escalator stairs, riding upstairs. I can imagine that'd be quite a surprise.
Well, maybe be frightened of them even.
It might be.
Describe a typical day in your house as you remember it when you were a child.
Well, I can remember getting up early in the morning. We could never sleep in. There were chores to be done. I had certain chores. My brother had certain chores. And after they were done, we had our periods of play as young children. We were expected to help. There weren't any other neighborhood children close, 2 miles, or let's see, maybe about a mile away was the nearest other child to play with. So that was a rare occasion when we got to play with them. I remember some of my chores, washing dishes, carrying water, filling the wood box, going to the ice house, and that was one I really hated. Happy when those days were over.
Could you share what one day of your life was like as a homemaker when you were first married?
Oh my. I could reminisce easier probably about some of the things that I did in my mother's home, but I was married just after the war. I was on the faculty of the University of Minnesota, and my contract ran until June. So the first 6 months of my married life, I was a full-time working wife, and my husband coming home from service just couldn't stand to sit around, so he applied for a teaching job and got one out at New London, Minnesota. So we were a commuter couple.
first six months.
Mm-hmm. We had weekends together. But they were busy days. I traveled a lot with my job in extension, so much of my homemaking was done on weekends. And that was well organized with washing, ironing, cooking what we needed to have for the weekend to eat. And I would say it wasn't an ordinary homemaking responsibility.
Maybe not what you had planned when you were going to get married.
That's right.
How about when the children were small?
When the children were small, we were living at Morris, Minnesota. And we had an upstairs apartment above a garage. And I had the usual washing, cooking, house cleaning tasks to do. I enjoyed it as a homemaker and a young mother. I remember that the washing facilities weren't as handy as they might have been because we were above a garage, had to go outside to go down to the laundry and do the laundry down there, and that posed a little bit of a problem in the wintertime with a young child.
I take it you weren't teaching or anything then?
No, those were the years when I was, I hate to say just a homemaker, when I was a homemaker, and that was my sole responsibility.
Full time. How about after the children left?
Well, that was another big change in our lives. However, it so happened that 25 years before I retired, I accepted a position at Concordia College, and so I was a working homemaker then also. And after the children left, my husband had become disabled, and he took over some of the homemaking responsibilities that I would normally have done, and had he been working yet. So I would say probably weren't the average home situation. But he fit in very nicely with doing the things about the house.
Did it seem empty then when the children left, or didn't they
all
leave
definitely.
At once?
No, they didn't leave at once. It was gradual exit. So that there were 7 years between the oldest and the youngest.
Mm-hmm. What holidays were especially important to you?
Well, birthdays were always important. My father and mother always celebrated our birthdays, and I remember during the Depression one time, the biggest birthday present I had on my chair was this big sweet potato wrapped up in a fancy paper. And I love sweet potatoes, and that was a great birthday present.
That was interesting.
So Dad and Mom always made a lot of our birthdays. Christmas has always been a very important holiday. I can remember many Christmases with family gathered together, aunts and uncles and children. And Thanksgiving was also special as a young child in that Mother and Dad, and we celebrated Thanksgiving with a couple that had lived in Iowa with my father's parents. And they continued to celebrate Thanksgiving together after they came to Clay County. And one year would be at our house, the next year would be at the Peaches. And it was always a big holiday.
I take it they had moved here then.
Yes, they had both moved to Minnesota about the same time, back in the early 1900s.
That's interesting. Who kept the money records in your family?
Well, in my immediate family, I did. And in my mother's and father's family, I'm sure that I remember my dad's very detailed records. In fact, I still have some of them.
How were the money management decisions made related to homemaking, just those that were concerned with homemaking?
Well, I think both Perry and I did a lot of talking and had a lot of good communication about how we would spend. Some of our early married life was money wasn't very
plentiful.
And we had to make some very careful decisions as to how we were going to manage money.
Did the children have allowances?
Yes, they did. They weren't very great, but they had allowances, and they worked for it. They had certain responsibilities they had to do. They weren't paid for doing a job, but they would get their 25 cents a week or whatever, and that was theirs to spend and use as they wanted to.
They really did earn it then. I mean, it wasn't just handed out to them. So
no, they had their household responsibilities.
How much time did you have for volunteer activities then?
Well, I took a lot of time for volunteer activities. I guess my background and my work in extension, it just became a part of my life. And I took part in Sunday school and church activities, Women's Association. I was also a campfire and a bluebird leader for many years. I saw one group of bluebirds through their senior year.
From the beginning.
From the beginning to the end, and that was a joy. Mm-hmm. And as a result of some of that, I did have a chance to participate in the county organization and help with that. Then I found myself involved in adult education when I moved to Fargo-Moorhead. Somebody had told the administrator of the adult education program that I had done some of this type of work, and it wasn't long until I thought, well, one night a week, that'd be fun. It wasn't long until I was teaching 4 nights a week.
That's the way it goes when they find somebody that's willing and capable. How about hobbies? Did you have time for hobbies?
Oh, yes. I had sewing was a hobby, and I loved to cook. I'd say that was a hobby. We also liked sports. My husband was a coach at the time of his teaching responsibilities, and I became very much involved in enjoying sports with him.
How about, did you have help in the home?
No. Maybe I should take that back. The first years that I taught at Concordia College, I had somebody come in once a week and help with the general house cleaning and so on. But other than that, I didn't. My children were still young. Byron, the baby, was 4 when I started teaching at Concordia. And I just had to have some help.
And no extended family? You didn't have anyone else around here that helped with you?
Well, I did the first couple of years that I taught at Concordia College, and that Perry's mother spent the winters with us.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped with the babysitting with the 4-year-old.
But the children didn't take much responsibility then, I don't suppose, if they were so small.
No, they were, they had their regular chores, but not a lot of responsibility.
As a family, then, what did you do for fun and entertainment?
Well,
I suppose you went to games if your husband was a coach.
That's right. He also was active in the Little League.
Oh, that's right, Little League baseball.
Little League baseball. Our children participated in sports in school, so we were with them. We enjoyed skiing. We enjoyed being at the lake in the summer. We did build a summer cottage and spent a lot of most of our summers out there. We enjoyed family games, doing things together in the home.
It's coming back again now. Families are getting into games again, aren't they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's good. How were your Sundays different from other days?
Well, Sundays were a special day. Sunday mornings were generally spent at Sunday school and church. And we usually had our big meal at noon on Sunday, which differed from the other days. And it was Mother's holiday in the afternoon, then everybody got their own supper. They could pick and choose from what we had. Many times we had company. Many times we were visiting others. And sometimes it were just family days.
They did that more at that time. You'd always have somebody home for dinner on Sunday, but mm-hmm. they don't do that so much
anymore. I remember as a young child that Sunday was company day.
That's right.
And we frequently had made homemade ice cream on Sunday morning before we had dinner.
How do meal patterns of the early 30s differ from the meals that they're eating now?
Well, most of the meals, I think, in the early 30s were made from scratch. I don't believe that there were too many, I don't remember that there were too many mixes on the market at that time. And so a lot of our own food was produced at home. I was still at home at that time. We had a big garden. We did a lot of food preservation, canning, and had our own meat and milk. So I would say that we had a normal, healthy, nutritious diet.
Mm-hmm.
But basically made from scratch. Whereas nowadays we get a lot of prepared foods.
That's right.
Although I don't use too many of them, but I do take advantage of the frozen products.
That's right. What do you remember about grocery shopping when you first started shopping for food?
Well, it certainly changed. We had a market over on North Broadway where my mother and father, and we did most of our shopping. I think it was called the Broadway Grocery Store, Broadway Food Market or something like that. You'd go in and you would stand and tell the clerk what you wanted. The clerk would go get your product, get whatever you needed. You didn't have the opportunity to walk around the store and select things as you do now. I remember Fred Janke was the name of the man who managed that store. They became very good friends of my folks. Nowadays, of course, we just push our cart, pick our products, and I guess the modern food market probably has upwards of 10,000 different items to select from, whereas in those days, it was much more limited. A lot of the things were in barrels and boxes, and you could scoop out what you needed and what you wanted.
How frequently did you go to the store?
Well, once a week, I think. We had a weekly trip to town. Transportation wasn't as great. I remember we had a little old Ford with the open doors. And the hill just across, coming into town by the old North Broadway Bridge, if it was wet, it was almost impossible to come up because it's so slippery. And I remember some harrowing times coming up and down that hill to go to town to get those groceries once a week.
What about prices?
Oh, I don't remember exactly the prices in the 30s, but they were certainly a lot less than they were. But, of course, income was a lot less, too.
That
was true in the early 40s when I was first a homemaker, too.
How was food kept fresh and safe to eat?
Well, there has been a big change. Going back to my early days of memory in 1920s, my father and mother had an ice house. This ice house was probably 24 by 24. And in the middle of the winter, when the ice was probably at its thickest, Dad would go down with a saw, hand saw, and saw the ice in the river into large chunks, maybe about 6 feet long, and with a team of horses, pull these hunks of ice up to the ice house and pack it full of ice. And then on top of that, layer the sawdust. And that was our means of refrigeration. And it would last usually until August or September with that sawdust insulation. And we had a great big Red Wing pottery container, jar. That we would set on that ice, and it gradually would melt its way into the ice, and that was our refrigerator. So that's how we kept our things cool in the summertime. And it was my job to go out to that ice house, and as the summer wore on, the sawdust got deeper and deeper and wetter and wetter. I hated that job, but it did the job well. Then I can also remember preserving, canning a lot of the garden produce. And Mother had a big boiler that we'd put the corn or the peas or whatever in and boil for 3 or 4 hours in order to process those vegetables. And as the war years came on in 1940s, we had the advent of the pressure cooker.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And that made a big difference our canning methods. Really, you could can corn in 20 minutes instead of 3 hours of boiling it on the boiler in the stove. And as we had electricity, the advent of rural electrification in the late 30s, then the refrigerator came into being.
I was going to ask you, when in your married life did you get refrigeration?
Oh, well, I had it, of course, when I first started.
Oh, yes.
But I'm thinking back in the farm now, and Mother
got it
probably in the 1936, 37, something like that. And then I can remember also the advent of frozen foods. The strawberries were the first thing I remember as being frozen. And Dad would buy a big 20-pound can of frozen strawberries, and we'd bring it out and put it on the front porch in the wintertime, and we'd have frozen strawberries. And then from then on, of course, frozen foods became more and more popular.
That's right. Now we have them vegetables and everything.
That's right, the freezer.
What about time for food preparation? How's that changed then with this advent of refrigeration and that? Do you find more time to?
Much more time. Less time to prepare, much more time to do something else, yes. It has made a lot of difference. Technology has made a lot of difference in the time for food preparation.
All right, that's food now, but what about water? What was your source of water when you first started homemaking?
Well, when I first started in the 40s, of course, we had running water, and I was living in Minneapolis. But going back to my farm experiences again in the 1920s, I can remember when our only source of water was rainwater. And we had a big cistern in the basement, and we would collect the rain from the roof the building and store it in this cistern. So I remember that water as being the water we used for washing and this type of thing. I don't recall that. I think we also drank it. I don't recall hauling water.
If you didn't have any other water, you must have had to drink it,
Had to drink it. I can't remember that we did haul water. Then we had a pump from that cistern right by the sink, and we could pump our water as we needed it. Then in 1925, we had a well digger on our property for about 4 months before they struck water. And they did finally get water in a 120-foot well.
That's
we were
like
near the riverbank, near the river, and there was a hard pen, they said, as they called it, that it was difficult to dig through. But once through that hard pen, we had a good source of water. And that well is still functioning today.
It is, really? I imagine that was a day of rejoicing.
It was a day of rejoicing.
When you had your own water on your own farm.
That's right. And I remember when Dad piped it into the cistern so that we could pump the water in the from the cistern into the house.
Oh, the cistern wasn't being used then anymore.
No,
or
we
did
drained
they just
it,
mix the
drained it
or
and
drained it.
Cleaned it and lined it, and then we pumped the well water into that. And then with the advent of electricity, we got running water, and that was in the 30s. It made a big difference in one's food preparation, one's cleaning, one's taking a bath.
We're so generous with the water as we are now.
No, I tell you, our Saturday night baths, I remember in a tub in front of the stove, and the youngest one first, the next one, and the next one,
remember.
On Saturday night because of the water scarcity.
Sure. Then we come to clothing and our household linens and that. Were most things purchased, made or homemade, or what do you remember about that?
Well, my mother did a lot of sewing. And a lot of the clothing was made-overs, or hand-me-downs. And she did, we didn't have much in the line of clothing, or the variety that we had. We had enough, we were warm, they were simple. Mostly cottons or wools, because those were mostly the only two fibers available in those early years.
Were you, what about purchasing? You said your mother did most of the sewing, but the things you did buy, did you go to the store and buy, or did you use the catalog, or?
Both. We did shopping in town, and we also used the catalog because of transportation problems.
And I suppose it was like with others, you had hand-me-downs and clothes made over if your mother could sew.
That's right. That's right.
How did you keep them clean, clothing?
Well, laundry was quite an experience. The first wash machine I remember was one that we rubbed by hand. It was a wooden tub type of thing with a ridge on the bottom and kind of a roller thing that rolled over the clothes on top. And then we advanced from that to a gasoline-motored wash machine, and that was quite an advancement.
Sure.
But there again, Mother and Dad would have to catch water or pump it or haul it from the well and heat it on the stove in a big tub or a big boiler, I guess
that
we called
boiler.
It at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Monday morning job. Monday was always wash day on the farm. And drying clothes was another thing, especially in the wintertime. I remember hanging them out on the front porch where we had clotheslines strung, and they would freeze solid.
That's right.
And we'd take them in piece by piece and dry them in the house after the wash. And those weren't especially pleasant memories.
You didn't plan many other things for Mondays, did you?
No, we didn't. It took all day.
You noticed it in your meals and everything, I'm sure, when it took so much time for the wash.
It wasn't
something you did before you went to work. Or.
And I remember my mother very religiously boiling the towels, always boiling them in the boiler on the stove. And that was an old wood stove.
Well, that's the washing part. Now, how about the ironing?
Oh, the first iron I remember is an iron, sad iron. That you would put on the stove, and we'd heat it. We had this wood stove. Then we advanced from that to a gas iron. Had little gas tank in the back, and you'd light it, and it would burn and heat the plate of the sole of the iron. And what a day it was when we had electric iron, and an improvement. And I think another thing that has really changed in this ironing business is the ease of ironing, the clothes, the modern day technology.
Materials and that.
That has changed the ironing. I can remember in 1940s, or 41, 42, when I was an extension staff, one of the things that we were teaching homemakers in the state of Minnesota was how to iron a shirt in 5 or 7 minutes. I can't remember if it was 5 minutes or 7 minutes. But here we were stressing energy and time management. And with our cotton shirts, they weren't the easiest things to iron, especially if you wanted them wrinkle-proof, wrinkle-free, I should say. And I went from county to county giving this demonstration of how to iron a shirt. And
you knew how then. You did.
I learned how.
I think they were wearing, men wore white shirts more then, too. I mean, everybody that was in business in that wore
That's
white
right.
shirts, and now they have pale ones. And
then we didn't have the wash and wear fabrics.
That's another thing. Mm-hmm.
Another thing we did in extension work during those times, I might mention it here, as far as food preservation is concerned, we were encouraging the victory gardens.
Yes.
Every homemaker had a victory garden.
Remember them.
And canning. And pressure cookers had come on the market at that time. And we were teaching women how to use pressure cookers in canning. And of course, they're still using pressure cookers, too. But I think more foods are frozen than canned now.
What about repair of clothes, or how did you keep your clothes mended in that?
We had to mend our own clothes. And I can remember as one of my projects in 4-H Club was learning how to make a hem patch and how to darn. And I exhibited both at the county fair. A lot of emphasis was given in keeping clothes in repair and mending.
What about now? What about what have you seen in the kinds of clothing accepted for church and for school and for shopping and housework? What can you tell me about that?
Well, I've seen a big change, much less formality. I can remember the time of going, you'd never go to church without a hat on and dressed in proper...
Your best.
Your best, that's right. And now I see people come to church without hats, in slacks, very informal attire. And I think the whole of living is less formal as far as clothing is concerned.
How about in school? When you went to school, what did you wear?
Always had a dress. And we did. If we wore over our snow pants or overalls of any kind, they were hung up with your coat in the hall. So, and I can remember my first years of teaching at Concordia College that the students, the girls, were not allowed to wear snow pants or slacks in the classroom. They had to have dresses on. So there has been quite a change.
What have you noticed in when you go into the shops now and when you went to the store? How are you dressed? I mean, not necessarily in your clothes, but have you noticed difference in women go now with their hair up and curlers and things
that?
And we didn't.
We would never think of going outside the house with our hair in pins. We didn't have curlers way back then.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you see much more informality and less formal attire all over.
I think so, too. How about the time spent now? What can you tell me about the time spent in housekeeping compared to what you do now and what you did when you were younger?
Well, my mother's full-time responsibility, I think, was homemaking, although she helped feed the turkeys and do some of the gardening and this type of thing. Whereas I think now much less time is needed in cleaning, in cooking, in maintenance of clothing, and so on.
You told us what kind of a job you hated in winter, but what other job did you hate most in housekeeping?
Well, let's see, what did I hate most? Probably dishwashing. My husband always said he was a automatic dishwasher.
That helped.
But I really enjoyed homemaking. I enjoy homemaking today and get a great deal of satisfaction out of doing it.
That problem is solved for you now, then, if you hated dishwashing, isn't it?
Yes. No, it's emptying the dishwasher.
That's it. How has your attitude toward house cleaning changed?
Well, I don't have the annual house cleaning episode that my mother always had. I can remember spring house cleaning and fall house cleaning. It was a real major episode. Now I think I clean all the time, a room at a time, thoroughly clean occasionally, but never a special period of time when I do my spring house cleaning or my fall house cleaning. I think it's more of a general, ongoing thing.
What chores did you think of as weekly chores?
Well, washing clothes in those days. Probably not so much now with the automatic washer and dryers. Ironing, bread baking. I can remember one day was set aside for bread baking in my home. Cleaning. I always had some cleaning on Friday or Saturday for the weekend, getting ready for Sunday.
I think most people thought of Saturday as cleaning day because it had to be cleaned for Sunday.
And shopping. It was usually a day for shopping.
What were some of the problems encountered in homemaking during World War II?
Oh, rationing. I can remember the sugar ration stamps and the meat rationing. It wasn't much. Meat rationing wasn't as much of a problem for us on the farm.
I suppose not.
Because the meat was available. But when I was on the staff at the University of Minnesota, I had to buy my meat and had to ration out. However, many of my meals were eaten on the road, so that didn't become a real problem. But it was for some people. And I remember for my wedding cake, we collected sugar stamps from friends in order to turn them into the bakery so they could bake the wedding cake. So I remember rationing as...
And the gas rationing.
The gas rationing.
If you were on the road, it probably did.
It did in that I had to be concerned about my schedule of travels. We did have an extra allotment for traveling as an extension person. But one had to plan one's trips quite carefully in order to make it from 1 month to the next with your gas ration stamps.
What were some of the problems encountered during the Depression of the 30s?
Oh, I think money available to buy things that you couldn't produce. I can remember such things as oranges being a
luxury,
and bananas was a treat. Some of these types of foods that weren't as readily available then as they are now because of modern transportation and so on.
How'd you cope with it?
We had produced on the farm. I felt fortunate that I was on the farm now as I look back in retrospect, because we always had enough to eat.
Always plenty to eat.
Plenty to eat, because of the gardening and the milk and the meat.
Were you ever affected by floods living there by the river?
Not until recent years. My early years there on the farm, I don't remember floods. Sometimes part of the land would flood, but it wasn't until the 1940s that the land flooded and the buildings were flooded.
You never had to move out of your home?
No, only in the flood of the 1940s.
Mm-hmm. How about the drought?
Well, that affected us, of course, in the amount of crops produced. It affected perhaps our what we did as we went on to school. I was ready to go to college in the 1938, and as a result of that, didn't get to go exactly where I wanted to go for the first 2 years. But after that, I was able to work 6 months a year and go to school 6 months. So
that helped. Mm-hmm. What impact have the technological developments had on your role as a homemaker, thinking about appliances and things like that?
Well, it's made life much easier. I was just thinking, as I was thinking about this, just the matter of preparing food, from the old wood stove to the kerosene stove, from there to a gas stove, and from there to an electric stove, and now the microwave oven. And that in itself has just cut time of food preparation tremendously. Then the technological developments of food, the processing, packaging, and transportation of food.
Transportation.
We can get fresh strawberries from California that are as fresh as those we pick out of our garden almost. And that certainly has made a difference in
the diet, in our diets. And I think the technology and the line of the washing machine, the dryer, the technology and finishes of clothing, where you can wash and dry, no ironing involved. I can remember standing, well, not hours, but a long time ironing the little ruffles on my first daughter's dress.
Oh, I remember that too.
And now when I iron my granddaughter's dresses, it's a matter of washing and hanging them up and just touching them up. So technology has certainly had a great impact on homemaking.
Did you always have a telephone?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The first telephone was a 13-party line, and you shared that with 13. And probably, I remember, part of the fun of living on the farm was rubbering, listening to somebody else's conversation.
I'm sure.
And I think everybody was as guilty as the next one doing that, especially if there was, and I can remember when some of the first boyfriends used to call, and how careful we were about what we said over the phone.
You would have to be.
Because everybody was interested in everybody else.
What were some of your frustrations as a homemaker?
Well, maybe not getting everything done that I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it. I can't remember any grave frustrations or great, some things I like to do better than others, but I've always enjoyed homemaking.
How do you feel about women working today?
I have mixed feelings, and I say that having been a woman who worked. I know that there are situations where women must work. And I think the challenge there is not to try to do everything. Something, you have to set priorities, know what your goals and value systems are in order to manage. Mine was a situation where it was a fortunate thing that I probably had accepted employment at Concordia College because my husband became disabled. And we were just switched roles. He was a homemaker, and I went out to work. It can be done. It takes a lot of decision-making. You have to have priorities.
That's the main thing, priority.
That's right. And then it can be very rewarding, and it may be very frustrating. And probably if you ask me about frustrations, probably the greatest frustration is trying to be a competent, good homemaker along with my full-time job, teaching.
Mm-hmm. What was your impression of such women as Eleanor Roosevelt or Amelia Earhart?
You know, I can remember Eleanor Roosevelt, and I can't remember many impressions that I had of her. I can remember being awed by Amelia Earhart, the fact that she was a pilot and was brave enough to go off and do some of the things that she did. And I remember when she became lost over the Pacific and wondering, still wonder sometimes.
Still wonder, but they never have really heard, have they?
No, they haven't.
In what ways do you think radio, TV, and movies have impacted our role as a homemaker?
Well, in many ways. I find the radio a lot of company as I work around the house. TV can be an interference, and I think TV has had a lot to do with our attitudes and our value setting as far as homemaking is concerned. Sometimes really good and sometimes not so good. And what was the other one?
Movies.
Movies. Well, movies and TV probably fall in the same category.
Same category.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've had an impact on some of my thinking. Some of them have reinforced my value system.
I think that's with all of us.
So that I can't approve of everything and I don't approve of everything I see and hear on TV or in the movies.
What changes would you like to see in your life as a homemaker?
More time. I still, as a retired person, have time getting everything done that I'd like to do. Here again, it's a matter of setting priorities and getting it to them eventually, I hope.
What would you like to see for your granddaughter as a homemaker now?
Oh,
I just... a homemaker, what would you like to see?
As she becomes a homemaker? I would just hope that she would get a lot of satisfaction and see that there is some merit in being a good homemaker, that there is some fulfillment in homemaking. I think sometimes homemaking is expressed or shown as something that isn't fulfilling, whereas I think being a homemaker and a mother can be a very fulfilling and satisfying experience. And I hope she can take some pride in being able to do well some of the things that are involved in homemaking. You can be, I always used to tell my students that food is an art medium, and you can paint pictures with food, the way you prepare, the way you serve.
That's true.
When you think of food preparation in that light, it's more of a creative experience than a drudgery. And I think one's attitude towards your skills in homemaking can have a great deal to do with your satisfaction. It's true of clothing, even in sewing, or home decorating, interior decorating, and so on.
Whatever.
There are lots of means for satisfying fulfillment. There may not be a monetary realization there, but if you, as my son-in-law says, when I think of what my wife saves by being home, there is a monetary value to her profession as a homemaker, too.
Well, she's got a good role to follow, her old mother to follow, your granddaughter has, so I'm sure she will. Thank you, Margaret. I've enjoyed this interview with you, and I hope others will when they hear it, too.
Thank you. It was fun to be here.